Antoniano. He has published very widely on St. Francis, his sources, and Conciliar Renewal, the History of the Franciscan Order, the Second Vatican Council, and the Franciscan Mission in the Modern Age. And today he'll be talking about a rule that saves, the Capuchin response to the institutional crisis. So please give Professor Buffon a warm welcome, please.
So first of all, thank you for the invitation. It's an honor for me to be here and to have the opportunities to speak in a plenary section. The reason because I choose this theme is I just thinking about this period where we are in, which is this journey from the reflection about the rules, the Franciscan rule, and going to the foundation of the Capuchin. And in my opinion, this is a good opportunity for just turning the vision from the origin, the Franciscan origin, to the 15th century, which is in my opinion, the last opportunity that Order have had just to renew themselves. From there is, yes, you know, comparing with the Jesuits and the other institutions, we start a big crisis, in my opinion, and we cannot come up from this crisis. This is my point of view. But we go to the paper. A saving rule, a Capuchin response to institutional crisis, a return to original question. At the end of the year of reflection of Mannerite rule, the 1223, that sought to return to the fraternical code drafted by Francis of Assisi, asking the question that takes precedence above all others, does ask, what is a rule? Directing such question to not only those of Franciscan origins, but also the protagonists of the institutional crisis of the 16th century, surely allows a broadening. Surely allows a broadening of perspective, and consequently, perhaps also offer a new depth. Indeed, the crisis that marks the beginning of the modern age embraces an unprecedented multiplicity of sectors and spheres of life. These range from religious with ecclesiastical reforms to the artistic cultural one of Renaissance and humanism, from the social one with its demographic increase and prevalence of the subject over the communitas, to the political one of the end of empire and to advent of fiefdom, principalities and national monarchies, from the economical one of transoceanic enterprise and consequent increase of capital, to the scientific one of geographical and astronomical discoveries, to the technical one of printing and nautical cartography. While the Order of Friars Minor reached its final division, at the same time, ecclesial unity itself was shattering, which contribute to the disintegration of the medieval empire. The Hanseatic leagues also dissolved due to the encounter with new geographical discoveries. The Mediterranean itself was branched by the barrage unleashed by the Muslim powers, while the spread of the skirmish between signories extinguished the creative humanistic fervor of the Italian peninsula. When ancient landmarks collapse, then do not question about future, the meaning of the present, and ultimately salvation necessary erupt. the rule of salvation. What rule could still ensure salvation? Having exchanged side in the Protestant Reform, John Eberling was not the only Franciscan to accuse his brethren of idolatry for attributing to the rule the infallible power to offer salvation. He did not hold back from criticizing Francis of Assisi either, accusing him of leading his followers to pass off the rule as a gospel. Seeking the path to salvation, François Lambert also laid down his Franciscan habit and, with the political support of the King Francis I, traveled all over France, resolved to propagate the gospel rule. Having taken a big step toward the new doctrine, Pierre de Sibylle and Jean Prévost also preached the gospel with revolutionary zeal. Like the first generation of Capuchins, Lambert proclaimed himself a true follower of Francis precisely as an advocate of a return to the gospel. Unlike the sackcloth-clad Protestant Eberling, Lambert did not doubt that Francis' true intention in writing the rule was anything other than the life of the gospel. He did not therefore deviate from Bartolomeo Cordoni of Città di Castello, who inspired the first Capuchin with the belief that in the spousal union with God, full life in God means the overcoming of every rule. Indeed, in his commentary to the Franciscan rule, written as a Protestant, Lambert proposed the gospel as the one and the only forma vitae. Following in the footsteps of Angelo Clarino's Franciscan spiritualism, he also argued that Francis himself would never have written the rule if it had not been imposed on him by Rome. It is not a slavish following of the law, which was also later repudiated by Bernardino Occhino himself, that saves, but evangelical freedom. I witness, affirm Lambert, that I would never have left them if, by remaining among them, I had been able to preserve the freedom of the evangelical truth. Even before Occhino, the French preacher felt betrayed by the excess of rigor, by liberty. Anticipating Giovanni Pili d'Afano, the leader of the drafters of the first Capuchin constitutions, and the first Capuchin to comment on the rule, Lambert asserted the need of a spiritual reinterpretation of the normative text, one renouncing both the excesses condemned by Bernardino of Siena, as well as the carnal conception of the Franciscan code abhorred by the Spanish Recollects, his contemporaries. It was precisely the right to freedom of spirit. I thought a piece because it's too long. A right to freedom of a spirit. In an attempt to trace the common root of Franciscan, or at least Capuchin, reformism committed to unceasingly seeking for the gospel in the rule and the spirit operating within the code of the Brotherhood, scholars are turning with increasingly conviction toward the free spirit doctrine circulating particularly in Spain with Cardinal Francisco de Cisneros, Maria de Cassaia, and Holy Roman Emperor Charles V. Bartolomeo Cordoni of Città di Castello drew nourishment from the free spirit vision, having learned it from the confrère of Iberian origin who accompanied him in his missionary journey, Spagnolo, the mystic and the prophet, whom the Capuchin historians credited with calming the distress caused by Ochino's flight. Cordoni, Dialogo dell'Unione con Dio, a corrective to the arguments of taking sides, constitutes the certain source of not only Ochino reformism, but also that professed by Giovanni da Fano, Francesco Ripanti d'Agliesi, Bernardino Pali d'Asti, and the entire first generation of Capuchin, as well as by the Valdesian brand of Italian spiritualism. Ubi spiritus, ibi libertas. The call resounds in the chapter of Friars Minors celebrated in Burgos in 1523, leaving no doubt as to its free spirit inspiration, which was still licit in the Spain of Erasmus and Cisneros. In that cry, we can clearly hear the plea of Felipe Berbegal, who was accused by John of Capestrano of wanting to perpetuate the ancient free spirit heresy, quote, almost as if wanting to resurrect the heresy of beggars and beggins. Compared to the leadership of the Catalan visioners, the spiritual movement created by Franciscan tertiary Isabel de la Cruz appears much closer to the Burgos reformers. The year following the Burgos chapter, 1524, she was arrested on charges of practicing free spirit doctrines. The abbess of Alumbrados of Pastrana, Guadalajara, also taught Franciscans such as Juan de Casaya, Cisneros chaplain, who was later made bishop of Berisa, instructed them in the practice of interior enlightenment that allowed a spiritual reading of the monastic rules. She insisted on freedom from outward obedience to authorities themselves if they gave orders contrary to the charity. Like Maria de Casaya, Bernardino of Arevalo, the herald of the Burgos chapter, also argued for the right to freedom for religious who, intending to observe a rule according to the motion of the spirit, left a community where the same rule was only practiced according to its normative dictates. Such spiritual freedom was even considered superior to obedience. Religious, orientated toward a spiritual observance of the rule, could therefore have deserted a community that practiced a merely material observance even without the superior permission. The gospel itself, superior to any legal prescription, would provide the permission for such apostasy. Quote, and what is more, with the license of the gospel, because the spirit of the Lord is not bound, and where the spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Luther, too, had praised the courage of apostasy for a new faith of those who preferred obedience to the world over ecclesiastical obedience. Alumbrados, Lutherans, and Erasmians, a difference could not be made even during the trial of Maria de Cazalla, which took place in 1524, the year of those. Bernardino of Arevalo's bound expressions should also be considered. Quote, living without the license of the order or of positive law is not enough to incur apostasy. as long as they do not live without God's license, which is more assured than the others. I hold the gospel as my only rule, declared the Minorite observance François Lambert, himself an apostate, according to the authorities of the order. He left armed with God's permission because he followed Francis himself, who in his testament allegedly proposed as the true rule the life of the gospel. A faithful interpreter of Arevalo, García del Castillo, located the right of the zealous religious to freedom within the context of his commentary of the chapter 10th of the rule. As with Arevalo, for Castillo, a religious freedom to appeal to the superior whenever spiritual observance of the rule was violated drew its legitimacy from Francis' intention. The superior, in such cases, would even have been obliged to make himself a servant of that zealous pain of illegitimizing his office as guardian of a brotherhood. In a zealous friar having such recourse to his superior in order to guarantee the spiritual observance of the rule, Castillo recognized the reformist principle that distinguishes the Minorite order par excellence, the possibility of continuous renewal, a perpetual evangelical conversion, the perennial vitality of the rule and the brotherhood itself would rest, in the final analysis, on the conscience of the friar willing to make himself a free interpreter of the spirit of the rule, even against the will of a superior who is resistant to renewal. Quote, the rule entrusted the renewal to the conscience, to the friar's conscience. To confirm his claim, Castillo cites Angelo Clarino's Chronicon, which reports a supposed second rule suppressed by the behest of Pope Honorius because of its excessive radicalness. It is Francis, he said, to have guaranteed the zealous religious to write on an almost absolute freedom which only the fear of schism obliged him to moderate. For Clarino, conscience enlightened by the gospel spirit would have been entitled to fully authority in the saint's original purpose, even in opposition to an opposing superior. Attempting a recovery of Clarino's radical thought on the freedom of the zealous apostate, the last followers of the Iberian reformers would study the free spirit. Attempting a recovery to Clarino's radical thought of the freedom of zealous apostate, the last follower of the Iberian reformers who studied the free spirit emerges, Antonio de Santa Maria. The choice he made in support of his commentary on the chapter 10th of the rule on recourse to one superior could not have been bolder. He decided to include the translation of the Breve Discorso sulla Povertà Francescana by Giovanni Pili da Fano, who, in transitioning from the observance to the Capuchins, underwent the trial of apostasy in order to affirm the primacy of a rule that saves. The heir to Arevalo and Castillo work toward a further emphasizing the already marked radical of Giovanni the soul of the Capuchins. In translating the patch of the powers of a zealous friars opposed by an obstinate superior, he strengthens Fra Giovanni lexicon to the terms compel and expel him. In the Capuchin text, he adds those who depose and divest. The Iberian Recollect was quite grateful to the Italian Capuchin for that freedom of spirit that in Spain's Inquisition was no longer accessible. Indeed, as he was publishing the Spanish translation of Fra Giovanni's pamphlet, General Inquisitor Gaspar de Quiroga placed the work of Bartolomeo Cordoni on the Index of Dangerous Books. As a result, Santa Maria was pleased to conclude his translation of Fra Giovanni's pamphlet with a cry equal to that which Arévalo had voiced in the chapter of Burgos. Quote, here great freedom is given to the good friars who are zealous in keeping the rule, putting into effect and carrying out their good will and desire to observe it. In Europe, with the hardening of social and political borders, as well as the spiritual ones, that began solidifying in the 1530s, Giovanni da Fano's work and life story became emblematic of a transversality that was not only geographical, but also chronological, epochal. He translated the free spirit of the early Franciscan reformism, which tolerated no factions, into a reform that was viable from within the factions themselves, not merely ecclesial, but Franciscan ones. Apart from the strictly religious sphere, the frontiers in search of a rule that saves also proved to be emblematic of an institutional crisis that is still in progress, that is the end, the one driven by the dialectic between individualistic tendency and the right of individual conscience, between individualism and individuality. In the crucible of the institutional crisis, a noble by family origins and destined to a legal career, Giovanni Pili da Fano entered the Franciscan order when the observance still enjoyed social renown and strong political support due to its highly ascetic and cultural tenor. Having written Incendio delle zizzanie luterane, he felt out of tune with the reformist tones of Cardinal Gasparo Contarini, who was humanist and Erasmian, and thus willing to negotiate with Lutherans and Calvinists regarding salvation by grace alone. Instead, Fra Giovanni sided with the intransigent reformism of Cardinal Carlo Caraffa and Gaetano Thiene, who opted for a return to order imposed by papal power in order to control the dissidents. Elected provincial of Le Marche, he was called upon to implement the Leo's 10th bull, Ite Vos, which attempted a uniformity of reform by imposing discipline on the observance. In the struggle to defend Leo's unity, Father Giovanni found himself, on one hand, opposed by the less rigid, and on the other hand, challenged by the zealots who were eager to a less formal a more authentically evangelical interpretation of the rule. It was at precisely this juncture, in 1525, that he faced the request of the future founder of the Capuchins, Matteo Serafini da Bascio, who yearned for an itinerant life and a sample herald of the gospel, irreverent towards the principle of recourse established by the chapter 10th of the rule, heedless of even pontifical permissions obtained by the preacher, Fra Giovanni did not hesitate to attribute the charge of apostate to the fugitive, ordering his imprisonment. Just 2 years later, in the 1527, publishing his Dialogo della Salute tra il frate stimulato e il frate razionale, Fra Giovanni reproached those emulating Matteo da Bascio for succumbing to the deception of the free spiritual doctrine that Paul, I quote, Paul, John the 22nd, and the Holy Mother Church and excommunicates. Son of mistrust, cloud without water, which are carried around by the winds and watering stars, the followers of the spiritual observance claim to refer to Francis' example, ignoring, however, that perfection consists in, I quote, going where the chapter sends you, never repeating a word, and never adding anything of your own, excluding a priori the concession of the chapter 10th of the rule, Fra Giovanni believed that, quote, by power of their profession a brother has no liberty over himself, never thinks or deliberates for himself, not even over the least things, dispossessed of any possibility of initiative, the zealous religious was always and in every case required to obey. Quote, you will obey simply and purely. Freed from the responsibility of serving as provincial master, however, Fra Giovanni began to change his conduct. He decided to join those groups of reformed friars who, quote, in order not to disregard their own health and to remediate relaxation, without, however, bowing to sect schism on division, apply themselves to a spiritual observance of the rule, maintaining their membership in the friar minor, which was instituted by the Itebos. He strove to show that the way, I quote, the way of life kept by the brothers of the family called observant led to perfection, and that whosoever observes it is without doubt saved. The attainment of salvation certainly constitutes the main goal of the 16th century reforms, whereas earlier ascetic moral perfection had seemed sufficient. In his Dialogo, Fra Giovanni makes frequent and heartfelt reference to it. I quote, Father, I pray you to tell me whether the state of this rule and the profession is certain, so that he who observes it may have assured salvation. Among the members of the reform group who were still uncertain whether to persevere in obedience to constituted authority, rising themselves to an observance mitigated by the so-called papal declaration, or whether to accept the stigma of apostasy, by adhering to the new spiritual observance, the doubt about salvation was becoming more and more stringent. Chiarini, I quote, Chiarini, Amadei, De Capuccio, De Evangelio, and many others besides, in modern days, it seems certain that if they could observe the rule, they would not have created so many schisms and factions for which they are greatly afraid. Fra Giovanni understood that the old legal arguments no longer sufficient to meet such pressing demands. Instead, it became necessary to demonstrate a concrete commitment. He followed, therefore, the initiative of Bernardino d'Asti and Francesco d'Ayesi, his future confreres in the Capuchin reform. With the bull in Suprema, they obtained for the reformed groups the autonomy they needed to conduct an authentically evangelical observance. However, a change of personnel on the top of the order caused an unmotivated annulment of the measure, decreeing the restoration of the previous status quo. His disappointment was so bitter that Fra Giovanni, revising his previous convictions, applied to the principle of recourse to one superior, provided for in the chapter 10th of the rule. He wrote not one or two, but three impassioned appeals. After receiving no response, the last one proved to be a real threat. His reason for such gravity and directness was still the concern for salvation. Quote, "We have been and still are troubled in our soul because, having already tasted the inestimable good of reform and its state of calm, full of confidence and security, we do not longer think to turn him back, rather expose ourselves to any punishment, than return to the restless community and the grave dangers of damnation. Having exhausted every attempt at recourse to his legitimate superior, Fra Giovanni thus saw himself forced to choose the path of apostasy, a path upon which Bernardino d'Asti, Bernardino of Siena, Ochino, and Francesco d'Ayesi would follow him a year later. Nurturing the freedom necessary to break from traditional obedience became the practice of enlightenment learned from the free spirit doctrine of Bartolomeo Cordoni. It was from Cordoni's Dialogo della Unione Spirituale that the aspiring Capuchins learned the arte dell'unirsi con Dio, to which the Capuchin constitutions from the chapter of Saint Euphemian owned so much. He underwent a cathartic transformation similar to Saul's electrifying experience on the road to Damascus. I quote, "This blindness with which you have striken me, Lord, like Saul, is good for me. Supply, O most merciful God, Lord, my deficiency in your goodness, and send Ananias, that is your grace, your splendor, the darkness of my heart." In the inward process embarked upon to remove himself from an institution that had become useless and even harmful, Fra Giovanni still appealed to the free spirit, availing himself of Francis' guidance in night prayer. "My," I quote, "my Lord, who are you, and who am I? It was an interiority that deconstructed itself, losing ties, losing its ties to external and normative formulation, until discovering the new guarantees of salvation. Apart from the renunciation of arbitrariness and subjectivity, it would seem that he underwent a kind of Lutheran tower experience. For Fra Giovanni, salvation was no longer appeared as an annihilation of personality in an obedience totally subjugated to the despotic authority, but as the believer's encounter with God, who is all kindness, who in the, I quote permanently, who in the secret bridal bed on the divine spouse offer himself in ransom to his sins, so that his soul may scale heaven and capture it. An interior space is thus open that is the path of enlightened interiority, as it already was for the Iberian Recogimiento mystics, became a method of leading a monastic life in order to arrive at holy madness, which Cordoni identified with the greatest freedom. I nearly finished. Giovanni was then ready to work on the Dialogo della Salute, written as an observer of a papal prescription, and rewrite it, turning into the Dialogo della Salute emendato. He was encouraged by discovering a new witness of the free spirit doctrine, evangelical love, which became his secret source of the new commentary of the rule. As observant discipline insisted, the code laid out by Francis for the early brotherhood could not be interpreted as a normative text, but only the pure voice of the gospel was such. I quote, "I say, O you humble and apostolic men, come, that your life and rule may be to keep the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, so that the rule would remain the path to the gospel, and actually seek the Spirit and his holy operation." Francis prepared chapter 10 of the rule as the cornerstone of every reform. Enlightened, I quote, "Enlightened by the Holy Spirit, blessed Francis, knowing that through the imperfection of human nature, which is always in decline, it would sometimes be necessary to give assistance to those who wanted to observe the rule, perfectly placed the remedy for obstacles in the chapter 10 of the rule." In the evangelic saint's enlightened intention, therefore, Fra Giovanni saw the journey of soul which obeys the Spirit and which no rule or authoritarian system can afford to censure as a way to solve the institutional crisis. Matteo da Bascio, former detractor, was not afraid to display his repentance, turning his exercise as a commentator of the rule into an autobiography. His courage to keep from extinguishing interior and institutional itinerancy is a warning for any time of a firm and of an authentic guarantee of salvation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Giuseppe, for an amazing historical overview of